And welcome to Thrift Shop Biography. This is the one about Jackie Chan. Thank you for listening. Hello.
Hi.
So this week I found the autobiography of Jackie Chan in the thrift shop. It's called Never Grow Up.
Yeah.
It's got a nice vibe about it, the whole thing, hasn't it?
It does. He's got a lot of energy, that man.
That man was born with extreme energy.
Yeah, he was.
And he still hasn't stopped.
No.
Even when stunts go wrong, he still keeps going.
Yeah, yeah. Even he's broken everything a million times. Yeah.
So what did you know about Jackie Chan before you read this book?
Not a lot. I don't really watch those sorts of films. And now I've had an education. I've seen one. I get how amazing it is. I think he's the martial arts equivalent of Fred Astaire.
Yeah, definitely.
He's reinvented it. Mm-hmm. And the precision and the training he's had, and how he will never do the same thing twice, and he's always pushing himself to do the next best thing. I didn't know any of that. Now I do. And now I'm amazed.
I've got a little brother who was into action movies and stuff, so just occasionally I would sit down and watch one and think, oh, there's nothing in this that I'm going to be interested in. And then they start fighting, and you're right, it is light.
It's dance.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember watching it. There was like this little serving hatch or something. It was tiny. It was like the size of a letterbox. And Jackie Chan just jumped feet first through it.
Oh, my God.
And I just thought, how?
Yeah.
It's superhuman.
Yeah.
And I was spellbound by that performance. Yeah. So I'm very, very aware of what a high level skill this man has.
And it's the speed of it, isn't it? Yeah. Exactly like that.
It's exactly like that. Have you had training? So we should get straight into it.
Yes.
Jackie Chan.
Born 1954.
Not called Jackie Chan.
Oh, not at all. And that's about his 12th name, isn't it, Jackie Chan?
Yeah.
He's had so many names.
So many names.
Apologies in advance for all the mispronunciation
that we will be doing. There might not be loads.
Oh, there will be loads. Chan Kong Sang is his actual name.
And what does that mean?
Born in Hong Kong.
Because he was.
Born in Hong Kong.
In 1954.
Four.
Yeah. It's a bit of a unimaginative name to give your child, isn't it?
I suppose so, but maybe they were really pleased that he was born there because they'd fled from China as refugees.
From the Chinese Civil War.
Yes, they've had quite an adventure. Both his parents had had other marriages and various dramas before they'd met. So his mum was 40 when she had him.
Yeah.
It was that very much last chance saloon.
And he was late coming out of the womb.
Yeah.
So they had to have a caesarean. And when they went into the hospital to have the caesarean, the doctor said to the parents, I will do this operation for free and I will give you an extra $500 on top if I can keep your baby.
Yeah, right. Because they didn't have $500.
Yeah. He said that that was quite a common practice at the time, is that rich people would take poor people's children. It's not like the poor people wanted to give up their children, but they kind of thought, well, my child's going to have a much better life.
Yeah, and also it was suddenly a $500 bill to have a caesarean, which they didn't have.
They didn't have.
So they had to borrow it to keep their child.
Chan Kong Sang was a big baby. He was so big, 12 pounds, that he made the headlines.
As a giant baby.
The headline said giant baby.
He's made to be famous. It's funny because he's quite a small fellow, isn't he?
I think of him as small.
Yeah.
But he's a big baby.
It was a giant baby.
He was a giant baby.
Good start.
Yeah.
Anyway, the friends did lend the money and they paid off the doctor's debt and off they go. Oh, they end up living in the embassy district. The dad's a chef in the French consulate.
In the French consulate and mum's a maid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they live in a few square feet with a triple-decker bunk bed.
So it's a nice area because they're in the grounds of the consulate, but they live in a tiny, tiny house within it.
And they're like the servants of the area, really, aren't they? So all the ambassadors' kids and fancy, there's lots of foreign kids, a real mishmash of people from different countries, but they just call them the poor Chinese people.
Yeah, so when he starts playing with other kids and going to school, he's known as the servant's boy or the beggar.
Mm.
So he's having to mix with the rich kids. So say he's kind of, again, the outsider, right?
Yeah.
We get this a lot in these books.
We do. Plus, it puts a chip on his shoulder and it turns him into a fighter because he's always causing trouble. And he loves fighting.
He does.
And he likes the girls straight away. One of his girlfriends is the foreign ambassador's daughter. So that causes trouble. He's a right troublemaker.
He is. Now, I wondered, because he obviously doesn't like school. He doesn't want to go. He wants to stay at home with his mom. And then he goes to school. I was wondering if he had some problem like dyslexia or something, because he just couldn't focus in his classes to the point where he would create distractions and stuff and become known as a little bugger, really.
He'd probably get diagnosed with ADHD or something now, wouldn't he? And he does say by the time he goes to train that he can't read or write or do maths. But then later in life, he learns loads of languages.
Yeah.
But maybe there's something undiagnosed that he can't grasp academics.
Yeah, it was probably the structure of school which didn't help him learn.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure. It's bound to be. But nobody was diagnosing that in 1954 and onwards.
Even when he was at school, to like create distractions in class, he would like deliberately fall backwards off his chair and stuff, like at the age of four. And
he kind
of got, he's already a little stunt man. Doing it for attention as well.
And he wanted to fly. And he wanted to be a cowboy.
Oh, yeah. He loved the American cowboy movies. Yeah,
you're right. He was born Jackie Chan.
Yeah, he was. I also love that when he's caught, like, he was, like, walking to school on his own at the age of five, which makes me think that probably was the whole area, if it's the continent.
Quite safe.
And he said, but on the way back, there was this cliff face. Instead of just walking down the hill, which was boring, he would shimmy along the cliff face at like the age of five. And he said his dad caught him one day, took him home and spanked him. He says, I learned a very important lesson that day. If I'm going to climb along the cliff again, I've got to check my dad isn't around first.
Yeah,
he didn't learn not to climb the cliff.
He learned stealth.
And also when he had that first fight at school, I think he lost his first fight. But then when it was a fight over the girlfriend, he beat somebody up quite badly who was like an ambassador's son. And then he got in a lot of trouble for it. And they reprimanded him and punished him. And then he said, oh, I learned another important lesson that day. If I'm going to beat somebody up, I've got to make sure there are no adults around.
Yeah. It's like,
he's kind of not quite grasping the lessons.
And yet, this has served him well.
Yes.
Anyway, he was getting in so much trouble at school, they pulled him out. And his dad took him to this kung fu fighting place called the Chinese Drama Academy. And there he's like, there's this whole world where there's all these boys just doing kung fu all day long. And there's also singing and dancing, but he loves all that stuff. He's like, this is like heaven to me. His dad says, I can sign you up for a year, son, or 3 years, or 10 years. Which would you prefer? And he says, 10 years? Yes, I want to be here forever. So he signs a contract, signs his life away.
Oh my God, you have no concept of time when you're that
10
young.
Years. It's a long stretch.
Oh, my word. And he didn't it turn out to be a stretch?
Yeah, 10 years of darkness, he calls it. They had to be up at 5 a.m. and they went to bed at 11 on the floor, mattresses all in a row on the floor. It's like army meets prison, but you are actually getting trained in kung fu and dancing and singing.
Yeah, it's like the kids from Fame, but with kung fu and martial arts.
And a lot of violence.
Yeah, very strict.
They get beaten every single day by the masters. His body's covered in welts all the time.
Like seemingly for no reason, seemingly just so you can withstand pain.
It does seem like that, doesn't it?
Yeah. But he's 7 years old at this point. Yeah. He is a small child.
Yeah.
And he's gone to this academy where he's brutalized. And he says it's a decade of darkness, but he also says that's where I became Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
at what price?
Yeah.
Well, I do get the idea that although he's covered in welts, beaten daily, and it was dark and hell, it wasn't hell. He liked some of it.
Well, he had friends there, didn't
he?
He had a gang of people. It's not like he was going through that by himself.
No.
He was going through it with
tons
his
of other boys.
Yeah.
And some of them he remains friends with for life and brings them into his films when he makes it.
Yeah.
Or they bring him into theirs.
Yeah.
So they all go on into the film industry together.
Mm-hmm. So the Chinese Drama Academy was essentially training performers for the Peking Opera. That was where a lot of them would end up. So the singing is like real. It's not just like a side thing and it's mainly martial arts. It's like they're being trained to sing opera.
So spookily enough, did you even know he had a singing career?
I had no idea.
Nor did
sung
I.
A note in his life.
Nor did I. And I thought it was a joke.
Well, he's released albums and everything.
Yeah, and done duets with legends. And basically, it's quite hard for us to understand the actual level of legend this man's at. He's massive in the world, but in his own country, he's God.
At some point recently, he was named the most recognizable film star in the world because he's not just the American and European market.
Yeah.
He's also massive in the Chinese.
Yeah,
and
so that crossover has made him.
So he's globally known.
It's to the point where he can sing a funny old love song with a really Vaseline-lensed video and it will sell because he's Jackie Chan.
He's Jackie Chan. Yep. When he went into that school, he realises now it's because his dad was offered a much better job in Australia for the American embassy. So they kind of poached him to be a chef.
Poached! Hilarious!
For much more money. And because he had this job offer and because little Jackie Chan was a little tearaway at school.
He cooked up a plan
to put him into this boarding school.
Yes.
Little Jackie Chan is 9 years old in a boarding school and his parents are thousands of miles away. Sorry, Jackie Chan is being brutalised in a boarding school and his parents are...
True, he is. He's also being amazingly skillfully trained in a craft and a career because the skill of him is born here. 10 years of that is why he's so amazing.
Yeah.
It's just maybe just what you have to do to become a stuntman.
I don't know. I don't think that other stuntmen went through 10 years of hard labour as a child, did they?
I don't know. You and I always worry about violence.
Yeah, I know. But to be the best stuntman in the business, perhaps it helps if you have been.
Yeah. You can take pain. Yeah. You do need to take pain. And they were actually getting trained in fighting because they encouraged them to fight each other. If they got angry with each other, they'd have proper fights. This is a school for violence. Skill, singing, kung fu. This is part of it.
It's
a strange package, but
it's Fight Club with opera.
But in the 1960s, he says that there was opera mixed with martial arts was a new trend. I think I've seen these shows advertised. You see them with everyone in total precision. It's the same with ballet and all sorts. You have to start as a kid. You have to. It's that hard. It's that precision. You can't just wander into it at 15.
Yeah.
They actually put a show together and took it to Thailand. So that's pretty cool as kids. He was 15 when they did that. The leading lady was 16. He completely fell in love with
Chang.
Her. Yeah, she sounds amazing.
Yeah, he fell hard for Chang.
Mm. But it didn't hurt him because he was used to it. Just got back up.
He just got back up. They stayed together a while, didn't they?
Yeah, some years, 2 years. Well, for 2 years, he was just meeting her on a bench, innocently. By the time he graduated when he was 17, his mum and dad had saved up 10 grand.
Yeah, but his mum and dad, so they've been in Australia for like 10 years, working as a chef and a maid for the American embassy. And all through that 10 years, they saved every single tip when Jackie Chan graduated from the drama academy and they bought him this little flat. And then Jackie Chan says, I realised what this was all about now. That was the only way they could provide for my future.
Yeah.
If they'd had stayed in Hong Kong and if I'd just gone to school, they would never have been able to do this.
To save at all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was all for him.
All for him while he had the decade of darkness in the school. So
yeah, but he came out with an incredible skill.
And a flat.
And a little flat. Yeah, it's great that. So then they started pretending they were adults, him and Chang, and living almost as a couple. But they got busted by the dad, who said, a martial artist will never amount to anything. Don't you dare touch my daughter.
Mm.
But it's that thing where he's got something to prove. And he's going to prove it to the dad. I will amount to something.
Towards the end of their studies at the academy, they've been doing lots of opera shows and stuff, but they kind of realised that there was also work to be had in the movies. And so when they're like 16, 17, him and his friends start going around the film studios and getting little jobs here and there and just hanging around all day in the hope that they might be able to do a little stunt or be an extra or something. So that's also happening the whole time he's with Chang. But he also has the freedom of life now because he's not in the academy anymore. And he's going out with his mates and he's drinking and he's gambling.
Yeah, imagine if you've been locked in a prison from 7 to 17 and suddenly discover cafes even.
Yeah, right.
It's so exciting. Yeah. Bowling.
Well, yeah, he loves going bowling. But you know what the worst thing about this bit is? He kind of finds his life with Chang a bit boring now.
Yeah.
He even got to the point where he'd be out with his friends, and if he was coming home and the light was on in the apartment and Chang was still up, he'd go out again, and then he'd only come home when the light was off.
I know. It's a bit sad. Plus, he's going to whorehouses. One of the studios where the bus stop was a red light district, and it was a lot easier than getting all these buses all the way across town to his flat and be back again at 5 a.m. at the studios. It was a lot easier to go out, have loads of fun, go to a whorehouse, spend all the money you've earned that day and stay with a nice girl. And there's little bunks, like those Japanese hotels, you know, that's how I imagine it, like pods.
Is this where he met that woman called Number Nine? I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. He only knew her as Number Nine.
Yeah, he always had asked for the same girl, Number Nine, and stayed the night in her little pod. And then one day he went in a restaurant and this girl came in and was waving at him, and he thought, who the hell is that? And the next time he saw Number Nine, she's like, why didn't you wave back at me in the restaurant? He said it was a massive wake-up call. Because he just hadn't connected that person with a real person.
Well, she was a number.
Yeah, she's just a number to him. And he obviously liked it like that. Then he said he just sort of woke up and thought, I have to focus. But the other thing he says is, as a stuntman, you might die. There was absolutely no health and safety whatsoever on these films for decades even. And a lot of stuntmen routinely went to hospital, if not every time you did a stunt, and there's nobody guarding them at all. So because you thought you might not live till next week, you just went out and spent all your money as you earned it. That does make sense.
Yeah.
Just live like this your last day.
So he's hanging out on film sets and getting jobs as like an extra. Also, he's really, really good at playing dead.
Yeah.
And he becomes known as the best corpse in the business. Yeah. So actually directors are kind of asking for this guy who's really good at playing dead. So he's getting work now.
Just he gets nice work.
But then, I love this, in 1973, he gets cast as an extra in Enter the Dragon.
I know. It's literally like the baton is passed to him.
Yeah.
Because Bruce Lee whacks him over the head so hard that he nearly makes him unconscious and actually really apologises after the take because he's got carried away. And he's like, don't worry, because, oh my God, Bruce Lee smashed me on the head.
It was an honour.
An honour, yeah. Kind of amazing because that's really near the end of his life. So it almost is like he literally passed the baton.
He just hit him over the head
with
it.
His skull. Yeah, he whacked the baton. No, but it is amazing, isn't it? Because he didn't become the next Bruce Lee. He very much didn't. And that's a running theme here.
Yes.
You can't become the next Bruce Lee. But he became the first Jackie Chan. Yeah. Because, it says Bruce Lee died aged 32 of an allergic reaction to painkillers. And it was a really, really unexpected death. And what I didn't know, I knew he was legendary, but that he was so legendary, the whole of China went into mourning.
Yeah, and the kung fu film industry kind of really
killed
it. Took a dive because people didn't want to watch those films anymore.
Without
Bruce
him.
Lee wasn't in them.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
No, and so he was really out of work. It was a massive blow.
Also, his discipline is being recognised on film sets because he is just an extra stroke jobbing stuntman, but he's always the first person on set. He's the last person to leave. And he's just really attentive. And he says there's a different culture on the film sets in Hong Kong. Everybody mucks in. And if scenery needs moving or the lights need moving, they all do it. And he's making a very good impression with directors and stuff. He's just so disciplined and so helpful. So that doesn't go unnoticed, actually.
No, especially when he steps forward, there's that stunt. The director asks for somebody to jump off a balcony, spin in the air, and land on his feet a floor lower.
Yeah.
And the fight director kicks off and says, there's no way anybody can do this. That's too dangerous. I'm not letting my team do it. And behind his back, he's like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And he said, I've no idea if I can do this, but I'm going to try. And that basically is his modus operandi for the rest of his life. He does it, flips in the air, lands on his feet, quite a hard fall though, stands up and goes, I want to do it again.
Yes.
And they can't even believe it. And he does it again and lands perfectly. And they've got the take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says that one jump changed my life.
Yeah.
Because word soon spread then about this stuntman who is willing to take the risks, can execute them perfectly.
Extreme talent.
Yeah. And because of that, now he gets offered his first lead role, but it's a very low budget movie. It's called The Cub Tiger from Kwangtung. It made no money. And then he remembers what his dad said to him. He said, you know, you can't be a kung fu person for the rest of your life. It's all right now when you're 20. Then he notices there are fight directors on set. So he becomes a fight director. But the film company that he does these films for, he says they're so disorganized and the films flopped. That, married with the fact that Bruce Lee has passed and the industry's tanked a bit.
It's all fizzling out.
There's nowhere to go.
No, and he's getting broke.
Yeah.
So he ends up cobbling together enough money to get a flight to Australia.
Goes to see his mum and dad.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he went to see them or if he actually thought he was moving there. He was there a few months and he really missed the studios. He missed his friends. He missed his old life because he was having a great life.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? He was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, and he said that he realises that Australia was his mum and dad's home. It wasn't his home. His home actually was Hong Kong.
And he didn't want parenting again.
Yeah, of course not.
No. Well, actually, he didn't have much of it in the first place, but...
So he's back in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And he gets a job. One of his friends is fight director on this film called Hand of Death. And he gives Jackie a job as assistant fight director. And that director's actually John Woo.
Yeah.
Who is a massive film director now.
Became huge after this film.
Yeah. But this was one of his first films and it completely stiffed. Because the industry was still getting over the death of Bruce Lee. Mm. It's amazing the repercussions of that man's death.
But he, John Woo, taught him how to direct. He was really kind, really patient and really good at his job.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Chang, then he felt so defeated again because the work had dried up again. That lovely girl, Chang, lent him 20 grand.
Oh, yeah, because she's become a successful opera singer.
A famous opera singer, yeah. And off he goes back to Australia.
Yeah.
And he's like, right, I've got to make this work because there's nothing for me in Hong Kong. And he gets a job pouring concrete and he's working on a building site and they just call him Jack because they can't be bothered with his Chinese name probably. And then he gets another job, a night job in a Chinese restaurant. So he actually gets a lot of Chinese friends. This is what his character's like, because he's just preparing veg and doing odd jobs, but he rises up to become a sous chef, which I now understand requires some really hardcore genius hard work and fast movement. Anyway, he loves it. And he learns English there. That's a really key thing. He's actually doing all right and he's got friends and he's actually enjoying Australia when he gets offered a 2-year contract.
Well, he gets a telegram saying, come back.
Yeah.
Because we want you for a lead role in a film called New Fist of Fury. So Fist of Fury was a big, successful Bruce Lee film.
Yeah.
And now they're making a film called New Fist of Fury. And they want Jackie Chan as the lead actor. So somewhere along the line where he really felt like he wasn't getting anywhere in Hong Kong.
He was.
He'd made an impression.
Yeah, he had.
For somebody to get in touch with him and say, can you come back from halfway across the world because we want you to be the lead person in this new film, which is a big deal. He didn't realise, I think, in what regard people in that industry actually held for him.
That's right. They had seen him.
He's 20 years old at this point.
Yeah.
And then he goes back to Hong Kong and he's working with the people who had worked with Bruce Lee. So it sounds like now that the industry is kind of finally coming back together, the teams are getting back. And I guess there's part of it that wants to honour the memory and the achievements of Bruce Lee. You know, I mean, what does it say if the whole thing collapses because he died? You know, you've got to keep it going, but also you need somebody to fill his shoes, which was falling to Jackie Chan. And Jackie Chan made it very clear that Bruce Lee was a different person, a different personality to what Jackie Chan is.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's saying the mistake they kept making was to try to slot him into Bruce Lee's shoes. And the Bruce Lee character is full of rage and he's a sort of Superman, like powers and angry and fights. But that's not who Jackie Chan is. Jackie Chan is, he says he feels like an ordinary man. And that his strength would be comedy and just playing an ordinary person that ends up in fights, having to defend himself, and then fights his way out You can relate to him.
Yeah, because he says the key thing is that when Jackie Chan gets hit, he shows that it hurts him.
That's right.
When Bruce Lee gets hit, he's like this impervious man of steel.
Yeah.
And he said it was really important for Jackie Chan to show people that violence hurts.
Yeah, he said, I want to be a regular guy and want to represent ordinary, flawed people who feel pain and despair.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. So he signs a 2-year contract with the big Hong Kong film producer called Lo Wei. And they groom him as the new major talent for the next generation of film.
And it keeps flopping, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, they rename him. So he gets a new name. Because, of course, he's not yet Jackie Chan.
No, he isn't.
Now he is Xing Lung, which means becoming the dragon.
Yeah.
And he wasn't too keen on that because Bruce Lee was the dragon.
So they're actually saying this is the new Bruce Lee. And he's going, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, he wants the work. But then this independent film company come along and say, look, within your contract, can we negotiate to nip you out for a couple of films? And it's low budget, but they sit him down and say, what do you want to do? And he says, I want to be this person. I want what we've just been saying. Yeah. And they listen to him and then they do exactly that. And they're the first hits he ever has.
Yeah.
Massive hits. They make him famous. Those two films, they are called Snake in the Eagle's Shadow and Drunken Master. And they're legendary. A whole new genre is born.
So overused phrase, but he is an overnight success.
Yeah.
Even though he's been through a decade of darkness and many, many low budget films.
Yes, yes.
So this is the end of the 70s. This is 1978 and 1979.
It's about 24, 25. So you know what happens then? That film company Golden Harvest come along because now he's a big hit. They offer him 4.8 million per film. Yeah, it's so much money.
Now his new management recognises massive success in Hong Kong. They want to make him an international star, which means they kind of need to give him a more accessible name. Xing Lung, they don't think is going to work for an international star. And that's when he becomes
Jackie Chan.
Jackie Chan.
So actually deliberately using the feminine version of the name.
Yeah.
Oh, I think he said it just runs together. Though Jack Chan is like, doesn't run smoothly together. So yeah, he turns into an arsehole overnight as well. And he says it. He actually says, I was quite a nasty jerk.
Well, he had, all of a sudden, he'd had money beyond his wildest dreams. And he went through a lot of it very quickly.
And he had a chip on his shoulder, so he had a lot to prove
to
people he felt had pushed him out of society before. He did things like, he was drunk the entire time as well. Yeah. Then he'd buy a Mercedes and crash it, and the next day buy a Porsche. Drunk driving, just literally being an asshole.
Yeah, I wondered if this was a reaction, because he's still only like 26, 27 at this point.
Yeah.
And I think probably if you've had such a disciplined childhood, which has continued into the first part of your adult life, I think at some point there does have to be a reaction to that. And I think that's what's happening here, because he's also saying he's not just going out and being an arsehole, but he's turning up on set late. And so he's holding up
filming.
Because
he's being drunk and he's so hungover the next day. He can only film one scene and he's got to pass out and then drink again.
Yeah, and he comes in with sunglasses on and they have to put lots of makeup because he looks hungover. And then as soon as he's done one scene, he's off down the pub again.
Which is costing them a fortune.
Yeah, which is in stark contrast to what he was like before. He was so disciplined and being the first person on set. Luckily, this doesn't continue for too long. He does recognise what he's doing.
He does talk quite a lot in this book about, he berates himself. He puts himself forward as not a perfect person a lot. He's awful in his relationships and he tells you all about how awful he was.
Yeah.
But he seems sorry.
He's an older man writing this book.
Yeah.
And it is quite refreshing to read it because we've read a lot of others where we've had to read between the lines. Oh, that guy's not a great husband.
That's right.
That guy's not a great father. But actually, Jackie Chan is telling us
Really is. He really is.
But I think he can do that now from the position of having good relationships with all the people in his life now. He's kind of mended them.
Yeah.
So now he's going back and saying, I was terrible.
Yeah, and he's become really philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon it's really therapy, isn't it, for a lot of people writing these books.
Yeah. So he knows that he's being an arsehole.
Yeah.
And he knows that he needs humbling. And it's good because he goes to Hollywood and he is humble.
Yeah, royally humble because he's nobody there.
Nobody knows who he is.
And also they're a bit racist, honestly, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it is the 1970s, but even so.
Yeah.
when he said that he gets a job in the Cannonball Run, I kind of affectionately thought, oh wow, I remember that. That was a really fun movie. And then he says, I got cast as a Japanese racing driver.
Yeah, Japanese. That would never happen now.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even know how to do a Japanese accent.
Yeah. Where he said he was just having to mostly make funny faces and yeah. stuff. And
I know, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Especially when you know the man's skill.
Yes.
Didn't they say they didn't even put him on the poster, his name on the poster in America?
They put, no, not in America, but in the Asian release, he was top billing.
And he'd also gone there to do The Big Brawl, where he was reunited with the Enter the Dragon team, but that was a massive flop, because he's not Bruce Lee.
He's not. But then why should he expect to come to Hollywood and be known? Because he was the biggest fish in his pond. And now his management want him to be a big international star.
I mean, you can't expect that to happen right away.
Right at this point, when he's had his ego checked and he realised he was nobody in America, he met this pop star called Teresa Teng.
Yeah.
Well, I looked her up because I'd never heard of her. She's possibly the biggest Chinese star who's ever lived. She's absolutely huge. She's supposed to have totally changed the face of pop music. A total legend. She died at 42. Another allergic reaction, completely unexpected. Because he says when she died, he realised he'd never had a chance to tell her how sorry he was from how he treated her, which was terrible. He'd said, I realised that the timing of it is he'd just come back from America and realised he was nobody. So maybe that was an ego thing to try and go, yeah, I'm somebody, so I'm going to get the most beautiful, worship pop star and then treat her like crap. She came to the film set dressed in this amazing gown and everyone on the set was like, wow, because she's a massive pop star. He said, sit, wait. And he kept her waiting for an hour whilst he just went through all these notes. And then she said, I'm going. And they went, go after her. And he said, no. I mean, like that. Yeah. And then didn't even phone her. And his next relationship is also way close to that. An actress who he gets pregnant. So I'm thinking that might have even overlapped. He never gets to say sorry. And he's really sorry now.
You say he feels sorry about it now. I kind of hope he does, and he's not just writing that in his book because he wants us to forgive him.
I do too. But he talks about the next woman who follows immediately after that, Joan Lin, who was a Taiwanese actress. She was really famous, so he's going out with the famous people, you know, because that helps boost your ego as well, of course. He said fans had committed suicide when they'd heard rumours that he had a girlfriend. Yeah, bloody hell.
When the papers reported that he'd married Joan, and he hadn't at that point.
No, but he got her pregnant, so he took her to LA so she could hide there, and they got married on a rooftop of a coffee shop. But then he said he left her there and went back to Hong Kong. And he got really paranoid that she had done it on purpose, got pregnant. She probably just wanted his money and everyone was putting this in his ear. Very Othello, you know, and he believed it and decided she was bad. And he said, I feel really bad now because obviously she was really famous. She had her own money. She was rich. And he shouldn't have listened to those people. And he treated her really badly for years. They're still together. He's absolutely openly admitted he treated her badly for most of their life together. And then he had an affair in 99 and had a kid. And that's the only way she knew he'd had an affair because it all came out in the press.
Yeah, he had a daughter.
She rode through that.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We've read enough of these books. Celebrity men are just dogs. Successful men, they just are.
Yeah, you do say that and it's a fair point. But also, he's never at home.
Yeah, and I think that's the trouble he has, the relationship with his son. It's hard anyway, but he's never there.
No, he's film after film after film. He sleeps at the studios and whoever knows where else.
Again, because that's his one passion. In like, these men just shouldn't have wives and children because they don't actually really want them.
Not really.
Their life is their career. That's their passion. Anybody else, any partner or child is going to be secondary to that. Mm. But that's not the fault of the child.
I know, but it's the curse upon them, isn't it?
Yeah.
I read up on his son.
Well,
JC.
There's a story there, isn't there?
JC, named after Jackie Chan, JC.
JC.
It's just horrible to follow in someone's footsteps. You can't beat that.
You can't. But you know how a father handing down discipline and stuff to a son, few fathers had the kind of upbringing that Jackie Chan had. Mm. So poor little JC can never, no child can live up to Jackie Chan's expectations.
Plus, I think he is a bit OCD.
I love that in Jackie Chan's autobiography, he took the time to tell us that he has to tell his son to turn those bloody lights off, like every dad ever has told their child to turn the lights off, you're burning money.
His son was living in one half of the house and he was living in the other. So he had the house rewired and then sent the bills. So he had to pay the bills and he never left the lights on again.
Yes. I mean, that is some extreme parenting. Not least, now this is a shocker.
I agree with that.
What, letting your children live in an area of the house where they have their own electric meter?
If they're going to leave the lights on, yes. That's a good lesson. And you should also learn the value of things. Oh, no. What was that when he asked for a car, was it?
Gosh, he asked. So he comes to his dad and says, Dad, can I have some... He's grown up at this point. He says, can I have some money for a car and a computer? And Jackie Chan sends young JC on a plane to the middle of the East Asian tsunami disaster zone to teach him some lessons in value. And so this kid has just gone to his dad for a handout and the next thing
flown
knows,
into a tsunami.
He's in a disaster zone.
But comes back and says, Dad, I don't want a car or computer. I realise I have so much and other people have nothing.
It's a bit extreme.
It is.
But it did the trick.
Did it, though? I think he's a total victim of a famous person, Dad. Yeah. I really do. I think he's struggled. He doesn't know who he is. He looks so like him as well.
We'll have to read his book.
Yeah, when he writes it, if he survives.
Oh, it's a tough break being the son of a massively famous worldwide $400 million celebrity.
Oh, it's terrible. And he says all the way through, I was a terrible father. I'm a terrible father. And then tells you horrible stories. Yeah. About himself being a bad father. So, yeah, there you go.
Anyway, he's a terrible father, but he's very good at doing his own stunts.
Oh, my God, he's such a good stuntman and he's so, so good at kung fu.
Yes.
He also has amazing ideas for films. He directs them, he fight directs them.
When he comes back from his kind of abortive Hollywood debut, when he does a couple of films, he comes back to Hong Kong and now Hong Kong cinema is being influenced by American blockbusters like Indiana Jones. So the stunts are actually going to the next level.
Mm.
And Jackie Chan is kind of still saying, I can do that stunt. I can do it. Because, of course, American films use stuntmen and they use wires and stuff. Whereas Jackie Chan's just like, I'll do it myself. I'll jump off this clock tower onto some awning and tear through it.
Oh, my God. Seriously. And he says they'll do it in little takes. They'll jump and then cut to that, cut to that. He always does it in a big, long take, so you can actually see that he's doing it.
That it's him.
And he says, you go to the cinema, see one of his films, and people used to gasp. But then he said what happened is people got used to it. They expect it.
Yeah.
So he always had to go that step further and do that thing more dangerous. And oh, my God.
It's amazing, because in this book, there is almost half a chapter, which is just a list of his body parts and how many times he's broken.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a bit insane. So actually, what's good, he's going back and forth towards Hollywood. And then when he is in Hollywood, he's getting these cop buddy movies with like actors like Danny Aiello, where he's like, I'm not really playing the character I want to be. So what happens then is that he'll go back to Hong Kong with the idea of a cop buddy movie, but he'll do it the way
properly,
wants to do it.
Like being a Hong Kong cop in New York, which is a perfect merger of the worlds.
And so he starts this franchise in Hong Kong called Police Story. And actually has Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, he said she was a ballet dancer, trained classical ballet dancer who had an injury. So him and this one other bloke trained her up in kung fu and she took to it so well. And then he put her in his film and then off she goes to become huge.
She just won an Oscar last year.
What for?
Best actress.
For what though? Oh.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh.
Yeah.
Amazing. In Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, of course.
What I didn't know was that Jackie Chan had won an Oscar. There's a photo of it on the back of this book. They gave him a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Well deserved.
In 2016. It's amazing that they actually recognised kung fu / action movies as a genre because they've been really underrepresented in Oscars history.
That's true.
And they gave him a Lifetime Achievement
He really
Oscar.
Does deserve it.
Yeah, he does. Gosh, the stunt he does in Police Story in the mall where he slides down.
Oh, my.
Did you watch it on YouTube?
I did watch
it. Oh, my God, it's insane.
Oh, my God. So he talks about this at length because he says it's a night shoot in an actual shopping mall and they have no time to turn the whole thing around to make their set as they need it once the shoppers go. They've got only the night. Then they have to set up all the lights and they set up all the sound. It's all taking hours. Meanwhile, he's having to sleep on a mattress. You think, He's about to nearly die. How can he go to sleep? But he's knackered because he's working by day on another film. So he has a little sleep. And then they say they're ready. And they could basically got one chance to do it because dawn's coming. And he's at the top. And then he keeps bottling out. And he's, oh, no, I've got to do it. And as he jumps, he says something like, I'm going to die. Doesn't he? I think he does. He has to jump through the air, no wires, grab the pole, right at the top of this shopping mall, yeah, and slide all the way down. And it's wrapped round and round and round with electric light bulbs that smash all the way down and then smash into this hut. And everything explodes, glass everywhere.
It's thrilling to watch it.
Yeah, do you know what? I'm not sure I'd have understood that it was real and actually really dangerous, because I couldn't believe that a star would have actually gone through that,
mm-hmm,
for real, until I've read this book. Oh, I'm going to watch these films now, actually realising how dangerous they are.
Well, he had second-degree burns on his hands after sliding down that pole, with a lot of the smashed glass and stuff stuck in them.
He's absolutely stabbed all over with glass.
And then he says that people say to him, why on earth do you do it? And he's like, well, because I can. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And it's being filmed.
Yeah.
So people are going to see me doing that forevermore. I kind of understood
that. It's amazing. I did too. And he actually says, if I'm going to die, at least it's on film.
Yeah.
he kind of got obsessed with it all being on film, hasn't he? Yeah. He's obsessed with it.
He's done some incredible jaw-dropping stunts. But the irony is he gets very badly injured doing quite a routine one. And that's why...
Oh, that the tree one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just filming in Yugoslavia, this film called Armour of God. And he's already done this stunt a couple of times. He just has to jump off a car onto a tree. And it's fine. But he says, oh, I just want to do it one more time. And everybody's like, no, it's fine. He says, let me do it one more time because I didn't feel I had the right amount of energy leaping for the tree. So anyway, they do it again. He leaps for the tree. The branch that he grabs hold of snaps and it's quite high up and he falls through trying to grab on other branches, but he falls to the floor and he hits his head on a rock that's on the
ground.
Yeah,
he'd have been fine if it wasn't for that rock.
Yeah.
And he said after that, we'd never ever do a stunt like that without checking the area for any obstacles and stuff. It's just the sort of thing they didn't used to do. Yeah.
So he's lying at the bottom of this tree motionless and everybody is like, oh, damn it. And they come over, he's got blood coming out of his ear and his nose. Yeah. So obviously they're up a mountain.
That looks like death.
Yeah, they're up a mountain in Yugoslavia. Yeah. They managed to get him to a small hospital. The small hospital can't deal with it. So then he's taken to a bigger hospital and it gets to the point where the doctors are all paralyzed around him. Yep. Nobody knows what to do.
Because basically his skull has smashed into his brain.
Yeah.
There's a big hole in his skull.
Mm-hmm. He's what I love about it. He said he was feeling calm, but the fight director was the one who told him what was wrong with him. And he said that the fight director was so panicked and crying and choking on the words, saying to him, you bashed your skull in. And he said because he was like that, Jackie Chan was like, shit.
This is serious. Yeah.
And then they realised there's this esteemed Swiss brain surgeon.
Yeah, this top surgeon happened to be in Yugoslavia and turned
speech,
up.
Yeah.
Basically saved his life.
Yeah, he did. So, yeah, they had to take the pieces of broken bone out. And he says he still has a soft patch there to this day. I mean, that's very, very lucky. But he says 7 days later he was back on the film set stunts again.
Talking about the violence and stuff, there's a time when he said he met Steven Spielberg. And he, just for something to say, he said, how do you make it look like the actors are actually interacting with dinosaurs and they look real? And he said, oh, it's easy. I just press a button and I press a button. He said, how do you do your stunts and make them look real? He said, oh, it's even easier. It's just rolling, action, jump, cut, hospital. That's absolutely true. Yeah. He says on the film set, they've got cars with the doors open. So when someone does a stunt, they can go straight into the car and be driven to hospital.
Wow.
Bloody hell.
One day, Sylvester Stallone invites him to set and he's filming The Demolition Man with Wesley Snipes. And he says during a break, Sylvester Stallone says, hey, everybody, Jackie Chan is here. And he said the whole set gave him a round of applause and whooped. And he's like, oh, so people in America do know who I am, because he'd only done a few of these B-movies that flopped. And then Sylvester Stallone took him into his trailer and there was a big stack of VHS tapes. And it was all Jackie Chan films.
All of his actual Chinese films.
Yeah, and it said that when they were stuck for something to do in their American films, they would watch Jackie Chan movies, and that's how they get inspiration.
Yeah. People really were in awe of him.
Yeah,
they really were. And he just didn't know.
Yeah.
The people who know, know.
Yeah, his talents were completely recognised.
Yeah.
He just wasn't a box office star yet in America.
What was his American breakthrough film? Was it
Rush Hour, I think. What? Oh, no, actually, sorry. What happened is Rumble in the Bronx, which was a Hong Kong film, the English dubbed version had a massive opening weekend. It was like a $10 million. No dubbed film had ever broken into the ranks before. So that, it was one of his own Hong Kong films that crossed him over, weirdly. Yeah. But from that, he then got into the Rush Hour franchise and stuff.
Yeah, and then everybody who's in awe of his skills will go back and watch his whole back catalogue. Yeah. So I think that's what basically happens, isn't it?
Because
people who are fans, they've seen it all. They know all the films. Yeah.
But he's 40 by the time he properly 40, crosses over in America.
Yeah.
Well, he's made it now. Yeah. Rush Hour, he's one of the biggest film stars.
Yeah, Rush Hour, I've never seen those films.
Yeah, they're massive.
Yeah, Forbidden Kingdom, Spy Next Door, Karate Kid the remake.
Oh, do you know what? In the Karate Kid, in the chapter, because that's Will Smith's son, plays the Karate Kid and Jackie Chan plays his mentor. And then at the end of that chapter, he says, oh, Will Smith was so kind to me. And he said, I'm writing this film script called The Greatest Gift. And the best thing about it is that he's going to cast me and there's no fighting in it. He said, so for the first time, somebody wants to cast me as an actor just talking. He says, it means the world to me. And he said, I can't wait to do it. And I absolutely know it's going to happen because Will Smith is a man of his word. So I checked online to see when The Greatest Gift was happened. It never got made.
Oh.
Just thought that was so funny. He says, like me, Will Smith is a man of his word. And I wondered whether he put that in the book to kind of force
Will Smith. I did wonder that when I read that. Yeah, yeah. Can't cast someone else now. Everyone's read it.
But as we all know, Will Smith has let everybody down now.
Oh,
we've got his book to read.
So. I can't. I know we need to read that.
Oh, he does lots for the pandas and stuff. I didn't know that he carried two little cuddly toy pandas with
him. Takes them everywhere
and gets photos taken with them to highlight the plight of.
Yes,
I mean, anthropologically, philanthropically, he does a lot, doesn't he?
He does loads. He actually had a turning point when he goes to a hospital. They're always inviting him to come and meet the kids, and he usually can't be bothered. He's drunk, he's hungover. And this one particular morning, he's really hungover. He goes, I'll go then. And he puts his shades on, drags his headache self to the hospital. And all these kids are so lovely coming up to him, and he's their hero. He's like, oh, no, I'm bad. I need to be good. They're actually getting to me. They're changing my heart. I want to do better for these people. I want to do better. And that's what changed him. He said that day in that hospital changed him. And he went like Scrooge. He went, I need to do good. It's going to do my heart good.
He went full humanitarian.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. He said he does so much for charity because it makes him feel better. He actually admitted it.
It's amazing what he's done and how he's used his immense fortune.
He turned it around.
Yeah. Yeah, he is a real force for good.
Yeah, I really like. Oh, by the way, if anyone's wondering why we stopped talking about films, he kind of has a chapter where he just lists all the films and has a little anecdote about them because there's so many. He, when he writes that book, he says he's done over 200 films. Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, Shanghai The Noon. Tuxedo, Bully Story, Mr. Nice Guy, Rush Hour, 1, 2, 3. He is flying and it's not even over yet.
Yeah, it's modern day blockbusters. He's completely crossed over. Well, like you said, he's on that rich list. He's one of the most successful movie stars of the modern age.
Yeah, I really love that he buys these old Chinese houses, do you?
Yeah, and when I first started reading, I thought, this is a bit weird.
Yeah, but why are you taking them down?
And also, it's quite a long chapter, which told me that he's very passionate about it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I loved reading what he does to them.
Go on, explain.
He just gets these old Chinese houses from how long ago? Centuries old.
Centuries old that are decaying because nobody's looking after them.
Yeah, and he takes them apart piece by piece and restores even like each individual beam.
Ships them to these large warehouses where they take about 2 years to work on them.
And he was talking to this woman in Singaporean
campus. I think it's a university campus.
So she had some land and she said, well, if you want to bring the houses here, bring them over. Of course, a lot of the Chinese people are saying, why are you taking the Chinese stuff to Singapore?
And it's like, well, he's spreading the history and amazing history of China to other countries so they can also appreciate Chinese culture. I can't understand why anybody would question that. It's an absolutely amazing thing to do. He actually describes enough that I'm getting fully behind it. It's really great. I want to see. If I went to Singapore.
I thought the same thing. Like, yeah. If I would like to go and see them.
Yeah, me too.
I love that as well with the heads of the Zodiac. You know, he did the film The Chinese Zodiac.
Yeah.
Because there were these big heads for each Chinese year of the Zodiac, the big animal heads, and some of them are just missing.
Yeah, there was a Chinese emperor in the 18th century who'd built this whole palace. And he used artisans from the West and East to design these 12 heads. And they were part of a fountain clock that was a centrepiece of the palace.
Wow.
And then the British and French ransacked the place and destroyed it and took all these treasures. So since then, he's been trying to track them down.
France gave them back, didn't they?
They retrieved 8.
4 are missing forever, I think. Well, or 4 are missing, considered lost forever.
4 were missing. There was a tiger that got bought up for 10 million. And the horse, he offered 30 million to bid on it, but it ended up going for 68 million. But they got them back, basically, but he didn't earn them. I think that was part of the 8 that they found. So there's still 4 missing forever. So he actually made this film called Chinese Zodiac to make it the whole story of this, to actually hopefully get the story out there. So if anybody had them, it would guilt them into giving them back to China.
And then that's what happened in France,
didn't it? That's what happened. The Pinault family, who are some of the richest people in the world, they've got a fortune of 70 billion, came forward after seeing that film and gave 2 of them back for no charge, even though they paid millions for them. He's sort of talking like it's one of the proudest things that he's ever achieved
to get
2 of those back to his country. He's got all this power and all this wealth, and he's trying to use it for good, and that will make him a much happier man.
Yeah, as we're getting to the end of this book, all of the chapters, I was feeling quite inspired by everything that he's done. I mean, I'm never going to be like a stunt man in a movie, but I can be a better person.
Yeah.
Like the last few chapters, he's learning to become a better person.
Yeah, and learning how to use his wealth. It is almost, apart from all the amazing skills and all the entertainment value of everything, it's almost a story of somebody finding pirate treasure or somebody winning the lottery, because there's so much about a young man who becomes incomprehensibly wealthy at a very young age and the journey they've taken to find out how to become a good person, isn't it? It's like... Yeah. What do you do? I'm going to sleep with every woman. I'm going to treat women badly. I'm going to take my entourage and buy them all stuff. I'm going to be this. I'm going to be that. And none of it's making him happy until he starts giving back. It's classic tale. Right. So basically, how do you feel about Jackie Chan now you've read his book?
Oh, well, I barely knew him before.
Me too.
I'm amazed at the journey of this kid who was basically forced into hard labour for 10 years. And then just emerged to go on and be one of the biggest box office hits of all time.
Yeah.
I didn't realise how American filmmakers held him in such high regard and how he basically influenced the whole genre of action movies.
Changed it.
How a lot of that is actually from
one man.
The roots of the
whole, always amazes me that one person can change the world.
I mean, it amazes me that he's not dead.
Does that as well. It's a dangerous game.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Thrift Shop Biography. We love making this podcast and we're absolutely thrilled that so many of you are already listening. You could really help us out by leaving us a review somewhere, wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you could share us, tell your friends about us or drop some links on social media. We have a Facebook page called Thrift Shop Biography. So make sure you come over there to hear about the episodes first and what else we're up to. Okay, see you next week. And if you're new here, there are loads more episodes now to go and listen in the back catalogue. So make sure you go and enjoy them. Okay, thank you very much.